Off Air, the podcast with Jane Garvey and Fee Glover.
I go to the sink and I have some cheese.
You eat cheese in the sink?
Doesn't everybody?
Every Monday to Thursday, Jane and Fee keep the microphones on after their Times radio show.
I think if we were to do a Mr. and Mrs.
Oh,
no, how would that go in the booth?
Badly. It would go very badly.
Unencumbered and off air.
Two tiny women with gobs.
Off Air, the podcast, now available on the Times radio app.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Want to join a film club that has real frank discussions, talking about films that you actually want to watch?
Well, then look no further, because we are Frank Film Club with me, Maisie Williams. And each week we watch a film and then come together and obsess over it, or sometimes absolutely slate it. Either way, there's always a lot to say. And the films that we pick range all the way from like 90s and noughties classics all the way up to new releases that are coming out every single week. And sometimes we get our listeners to pick for us.
And we all work in the film industry, don't we, ladies?
Indeed.
So we really love to look at specifically how a film was made.
So if this sounds like your bag, then come and have a listen to Frank Film Club. And remember, absolutely everyone is welcome in this club.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Hello and welcome to the Times Business Podcast. I'm Callum Jones. This week, the FTSE 100 broke through 7,500 points for the first time and then slumped back as the pound strengthened above 130 against the dollar for the first time since the autumn. Here to discuss all this and more is Alex Ralph, our business correspondent, Martin Waller, editor of the Tempest column, and Emily Gosden, our energy editor. Now, Emily, the FTSE was really pushed up by the oil price this week, Brent crude peaking just north of $52 per barrel. What's been driving it higher?
We'd seen oil prices fall back quite heavily to below $50 a barrel. And then things started to pick up again towards the back end of last week with some slightly more encouraging signs out of US inventory data. And the thing that really drove it on Monday was this announcement from Russia and Saudi that they had agreed to, in their words, do whatever it takes to try and get the market back into balance. And they've said they've agreed that OPEC needs to extend its current production curb agreement by a further 9 months, which would take it through to March 2018. So there was quite a bit of optimism on the back of that, driving the oil price higher.
And all this comes ahead of next week's meeting?
Absolutely. So they're meeting in Vienna next week, and that's where they have to do the tough bit of persuading all the other countries in OPEC to sign up to what Saudi thinks is a good idea. So Saudi is obviously by far the biggest producer in OPEC, but there are a lot of other countries who may be somewhat hesitant of committing to a full 9 month extension. Iraq in particular may have some concerns over whether it can commit to that. And then there's also questions about all the non-OPEC or NOPEC countries. So Russia has obviously suggested it backs an extension, but questions over whether all the others will necessarily sign up to.
Do you think this is the start of some great resurgence, or does that all lean on the result of next week? Some great resurgence in the oil price back above $60 per barrel. What do you think?
You know, it's always a dangerous thing to start predicting the oil price, but I'm not convinced that we're going to see sustained prices above $60. I suspect if they do manage to confirm a deal next week, you might well see a bit of a short-term rally, but I doubt we'll see prices sustained above $60 for much of this year. I think the market is actually assuming that we will get an extension. It's probably been assuming that for some time. So if they fail to agree, we'll, I think, see quite a dip in prices. If they agree, a bit of a short-term rally, but I think most of the market is really expecting prices to remain within a range of sort of $50 to $60 over the rest of the year. Certainly, if you look at the International Energy Agency survey of oil execs, which they published this week, you've got, I think, something like 80% of them forecasting $50 to $60 oil this year.
Martin, new record highs, a nine-day winning streak. Why is the FTSE doing so well this year?
Until today, of course.
Of course.
Which is, I think, largely, I mean, everyone's talking about Trump and political confusion in the White House and whatever on Capitol Hill. I mean, this is really a proxy for the sterling, given how much of the FTSE is earned outside this country and is sourced in dollars. You'd expect any rise to 130 in the price of sterling to hit the FTSE. It's been going the other way ever since the referendum on sterling collapsed or fell very sharply. I don't think this is particularly relevant in terms of the actual metrics of the market.
And I suppose it's much more closely aligned to earnings season as well.
Well, funny enough, I was talking to someone the other day who accused me of something I have not been accused of for a very long time indeed, which is being optimistic about the market. I actually, 6 months ago, I felt the market looked very badly overvalued on earnings terms, in terms of potential risk. Look at the last reporting season, look at the 2016 reporting season, and particularly the Q1s. There haven't been any real horrors. There haven't really been any massive dividend cuts. There haven't been any particularly awful things happening. We've seen three things which I think are useful straws in the wind. BP, one, Shell, two, Vodafone, all high-yielding income stocks. It's pretty obvious BP won't cut the dividend, ditto Shell. Vodafone's dividend is now being covered for the first time for several years by free cash flow. That means that in a market which is driven, in my personal view, by the sort of income you can get, because you can't get anywhere else, this is a cliche, I've been saying this for months and months, probably years, if you can get 4 or 5% yield or more than that from relative blue chip companies that are not going to cut their dividend, like BP, Shell, Vodafone, whatever, and you can't get it anywhere else, why do we think the market is being supported? It's a straight income market.
Alex, you were still covering the markets a year ago at the time of the European referendum, at a time when people were predicting Armageddon if Britain voted Brexit and that there was going to be a huge stock market slump. I looked it up on June 23rd last year. The FTSE was at 6,338. Now, of course, it crossed earlier this week 7,500. This really wasn't what anyone was predicting, was it?
No, I mean, casting our minds back, it had that knee-jerk sell-off after the vote because no one really saw that coming. Apart from voters, and then it rallied and it defied all expectations. It bounced back very quickly, and it then got another leg up on Trump's election in November. And since then, you know, some analysts and some traders have been saying that it's been due a fall because it looks like it's overheating a bit.
Martin?
The knee-jerk reaction after the referendum was ludicrous. There was some stupid valuations, as I said at the time, and companies are looking very cheap indeed. I don't think the rally thereafter was anything particularly to do with fundamentals. What I think we're now seeing is a shift into fundamentals again. We are seeing people saying, well, actually, let's value this market on what we think it's worth. And I will again go back to my point about income, and that's what it's all about. Sorry to repeat myself, but that's where we are.
Well, the index surged in the first half of the week, but then fell back. Before we discuss why, let's listen to a clip recorded a few days ago in Connecticut.
Look at the way I've been treated lately. Especially by the media. No politician in history, and I say this with great surety, has been treated worse or more unfairly. You can't let them get you down. You can't let the critics and the naysayers get in the way of your dreams.
President Trump there speaking on Wednesday, and I suppose he would say that the critics and the naysayers have been out in force this week following reports that he tried to influence a federal investigation into his former national security advisor. Talk of impeachment has very much hit the markets over the past few days, Alex. Is the Trump bump over now?
I think it's probably premature to say the bump is over. I think sometimes markets are looking for a reason to try and trigger a sell-off, and sometimes there are these sort of catalysts where, you know, people can sort of engineer a squeeze or some sort of profit taking, and it looked to me as though that was partly what was happening this week, and I'd be surprised if we were to see a sustained sort of sell-off over the coming weeks.
Martin, you mentioned obviously that many of the FTSE 100 companies report in dollars. How much an impact can American issues like this have on the FTSE?
It's less that, it's more a question of whether or not the infrastructure plans that Trump has talked about, which are very good for an awful lot of British companies, like Ashtead would be a great example. Plantire firm gets most of its earnings out of the US. There are other companies of that sort who are tied to infrastructure, and they just going to, Ashtead shares had a bad time this week because they're just tied to the notion that he's spent a lot of money, and if he isn't, then they're going to fall. That has more, really, I think, to do with fundamentals. I just think anyone sitting here trying to predict what the US political scene or the economy will look like in 6 months' time is frankly wasting their time.
I don't know why we're all here then, to be frank. But
we're here because you have to try to do that. But I mean, it's a bit like Brexit. I keep being asked what will happen after Brexit and what do corporates think. The ones I talk to all say the same thing. We haven't the faintest idea. We continue going from day to day and we'll see what that landscape looks like in two, three, 4 years' time.
I think the concern with that sell-off that we saw was that, you know, the deeper that Trump gets dragged into this, the more distracted he'll be from, you know, driving through what will be very controversial political reform. And that's what the market's afraid of, that his what he was elected to achieve will be sidelined by, you know, Russia.
Emily, on a slightly different note, energy stocks have also been pretty volatile over recent weeks, moving away from American politics, focusing on British politics as the Conservatives continue to tout these price caps on the election campaign. Do you think that the price caps have now been priced in now into energy stocks, or do you think there might be more action there on the stock market after the election?
Well, it's an interesting time to ask that question because we had the manifesto, you know, a few hours ago, and we've seen Centrica shares up about 4% since the manifesto was published, because it appears that the manifesto wording is somewhat weaker than what Theresa May had been talking about last week. So I think the market had been pricing in a pretty bearish scenario. People have been looking at working out £100 off bills for all standard variable customers and coming out with some pretty scary numbers on what that might do to Centrica and SSE. So I think they probably have been pricing that in. The hint today that it might not be quite that severe, or leaving a bit of wriggle room for something less severe, has seen the stocks rally a little bit. So I think it's going to be a bumpy time ahead for probably a good 6 months or so until we actually get the detail of this firmed up.
Martin, what do you make of the energy companies and how they're looking for investors at the moment?
You know, I differentiate between those companies like SSC, which are reported this week, which has fairly slender dividend cover, and those companies like National Grid has quite wide dividend cover, and they all report in this week. And we will look at the two water companies next week, which is really interesting to United Utilities and Severn Trent will report next week. These are big dividend stocks. I hate to keep going back to the subject, but it is rather important. And I would differentiate between those that are capable of paying dividends going forward and those that may have a little bit of difficulty. I think that's rather more significant than any political moves, which won't kick in till 18, 19?
We think 2018, but...
Well,
anyone's guess.
Sure, anyone's guess. I don't think anyone can possibly say.
Also reporting next week will be Marks and Spencer's. We get full year figures, which have been people have been looking forward to for quite a while. Alex, it's quite hard to believe that Steve Rowe has now been chief executive for more than a year. What are the main challenges for him right now?
Well, it's still the challenge that he faced since he was promoted to the top job, which is to basically turn around M&S's long underperforming general merchandise business, which mainly is the clothing business, which has been struggling for a number of years, and a number of chief executives have failed to turn it around. He set out some ideas towards the back end of last year, which wasn't particularly surprising. It was to prioritise the food business, to grow that, and to sort of scale back the clothing business. And the market will be looking for an update on the sort of operational progress that they've made on that so far.
Martin, what do you make of the business?
I've been a long-term bear of Marks and Spencers. I don't like where they are in the market. They are a very, very, very pricey food retailer with an underperforming clothing arm attached. I don't think I want to be in either of those areas in the current market, especially if we're seeing a squeeze on consumer spending. The companies that will suffer will be highly priced food companies, and the ones that will do well will be low priced food companies like Aldi and Lidl, and this process will just continue. As to the clothing range, I mean, I haven't been in one of their stores for 20 years. I was in one the other day, and it was practically a bit shocking in terms of the general quality of merchandise and the competence, the retailing competence I saw. I was very surprised.
Are there any high street stocks that you would recommend buying at the moment?
There are some. I wouldn't be generally buying high street stocks linked to consumer spending any more than I'd be buying pub stocks linked to consumer spending. I like Dunelm. It's a low cost. It's the Aldi and Lidl of the homeware sector. And not well known in the city because they've got virtually nothing south of Watford, increasing stores, and they weren't really studied much. They've got a good management. They've got a good record. Anything you can buy that's serving the value end of the market, and you can't buy Aldi and Lidl in this country on this market, not quoted here, would be my personal choice. Anything at the top end, I would personally avoid.
That's about all we've got time for this week. Do subscribe on iTunes to get a new episode every 7 days. In the meantime, log on to thetimes.co.uk/business for news and analysis each day. My thanks to Emily Gosden, Alex Ralph and Martin Waller, and to you for listening.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Rising sea levels, extreme weather patterns, extinctions of species. Our planet needs protecting. I'm Adam Vaughan, the environment editor for The Times, and this is Planet Hope from The Times, in partnership with Rolex and its Perpetual Planet Initiative. In this podcast, we hear from leading experts from around the world who are committed to finding solutions. These explorers, scientists, entrepreneurs, and citizens are committed to a common goal: to protect our home, Earth. Listen now wherever you get your podcasts.